south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's talk about banks, specifically banks, as it pertains to using them in Latin America and transferring money back and forth from another country to Latin America. But first, let's talk about how Latin American banks, and I suppose banks everywhere, can steal your money if you don't have any activity for a while. Now, I've had a variety of bank accounts in different countries in Latin America, and most of the times, at least in the last couple of years, if you don't have any movement, that is, you haven't withdrawn a buck or deposited a buck or any amount at all in 6 months, you'll find if you use your debit or credit card, you'll get locked out. Now, that doesn't mean you lose your money, it just means they've deactivated your credit card or debit card. So that's one thing you have to remember. If you open up a bank account in Latin America, and I really suggest you do, and of course these days you'll need a Latin lawyer to help you do that, because there's practically no way to open a bank account in any Latin country without a local professional reference like a lawyer or accountant or doctor. That's what's called a fiador. Fiador. But you know, if you're new in a country, or even if you've visited it, gone on vacation there a while, you're probably not going to be able to find a professional like a doctor or an accountant who will stick his neck out for you and be the so-called fiador, you know, your reference. But for lawyers, that's part of their job. That's how they help gringos and expats out. So just remember, you'll need a lawyer or a fiador, they call them, a local character reference to open a bank account these days. That is, unless you've already got residency in a country. But you won't be able to get residency without having a bank account, which makes the whole thing kind of a catch-22 and why you want to have your lawyer help you out with it. Yeah, I know, it's getting more complicated by the minute, and it's why you have to get that plan B going now. Get the hell out of Dodge, or make plans to get the hell out of Dodge, you know, have an insurance policy. So when the feces hits the ventilator, you'll have a definite plan and won't get trampled physically or financially in the chaos that's sure to follow. Just think about how your friends and family are going to feel when the next big crisis comes, and it surely will. Chances are they're going to call 911 and panic when no one answers. Meanwhile, you'll gather yourself and a few select family members together, pick up some plane tickets, and head off to that nice tropical Plan B destination you've been setting up for yourself for the last couple of years. Sure, you'll feel the panic. You'll feel the urgency. You'll see normalcy slipping away. But the big difference, you'll have a plan, and they won't. At least I hope you have a plan. That's why you're listening to this show, right? In any event, you'll have to get some of your dough down to your Latin destination before the next crisis. The only way to do that is to carry some of your assets down, and that's difficult. Or do a crypto transfer, or most commonly, use a bank. That's why I'm going to start the show today by reading some excerpts from an article that Mel sent me. Thanks for that, Mel. Title is, Under What Circumstances Can a Mexican Bank Account Be Considered Abandoned and the Money Seized by the Bank? It starts like this. Recently, I was talking with a friend of mine in Mexico, a fellow expat from the U.S., and he was telling me about a problem he had with one of his Mexican bank accounts. He said when he first moved to Mexico several years ago, he opened a checking account at two Mexican banks because he wasn't sure which one would work best for him for international transfers and online payments. After using them both for a short time, he chose his favorite bank and used that account for all of his banking needs. Then, instead of closing the other account, which had little less than $1,000 in it, he decided to hold on to it just in case. Recently, my same friend used his ATM card to check that the old account still was available and it didn't work. When he went to the bank to inquire, he was told the account had been abandoned and the funds had been transferred to a general fund in accordance with Mexican federal law of account abandonment. In fact, it's called Article 61 of the Law de Instituciones del Crédito. And according to that law, if there aren't any deposits, withdrawals, or transfers, that is, movement, for a period of 3 years, the financial institution is required to transfer the funds to a global account. However, it says, the financial institution is required to notify the account holder by mail 90 days prior to transferring out their money. All right, me, Johnny, just a little comment here. You know, the mail sucks in Latin America. So Don't count on ever getting prior notice 90 days before they're going to take your money from your account. Unless, when you open those bank accounts, you make sure you put down your lawyer's address as your mailing address. That's another reason. You really have to have a good relationship with your lawyer. Then you can use his address as your mailing address, because mail will always get to an attorney's address because he's usually located in a business district. And mail does get through, that is snail mail, in every business district throughout Latin America. But as far as counting on the mail, that is snail mail, actually getting to a home address, well, good luck with that. Unless, again, you live in a gated, guarded, high-rise residential tower that's well-known, or a very high-end neighborhood, because you know where the wealthy cats live. That is, the wealthy and the upper middle classes. The roads are always nicer, the yards are always cleaner, the neighborhood's always safer, the cars are always newer and better, and the mail almost always gets through. Which is not at all true for the other 80 to 90% of Latin America. Oh, it'll get through once in a while, but you can't count on all of it getting through. That's why lots of gringos and expats will sign up for a service like mailboxes, etc., or any of a number of private mailbox services in various cities in Latin America. In other words, sign up for maybe $25 to $50 a year. They've got rows and rows of mailboxes there. You get your key and you come in and pick up your stuff, and it'll always get through. And these days, at least, a lot of those companies will send you an email telling you when something's arrived in your box. But, you know, if you have a good relationship with your lawyer, you can use his address for all your official mail. That's a step that's highly recommended, and it makes you quite anonymous, meaning it lowers your profile and footprint tremendously. Which brings us to those Miami mail forwarding services. I talked a lot about those in past shows. I have one myself, in fact, two. Most, by the way, are free. You sign up and register on the internet, and you pay whatever the shipping would be when you pick up your items. You know the drill. Then you can have places like Amazon, eBay, and any other mail order product service receive whatever you're buying online because they think Miami is your mailing address. And it is, sorta, though it's an intermediary mailing address, because then they stick it on a plane, send it to your Latin country. They shoot you an email saying it's arrived and how much you have to pay in shipping charges. And you can either go and pick it up there at their office, which is almost always near the airport by the big cities. And they've got little satellite offices in the other cities in your country. Or you can pay an extra buck or two. Yep, that's all it is. And they'll deliver it right to your door on a motorcycle. And if it's too big for a motorcycle, well, it'll come in a truck. But I don't recommend any of that stuff, because why should you let everyone know where you live? That's one of the unsung advantages of having your plane be in Latin America. Once you've bought or rented a place, you really don't have to divulge that information to anyone. Not banks, credit card companies, Amazon, even your mail forwarding services. Of course, when you sign up, they'll always ask you for your address, but all that's really required is you give them a real email address so they can notify you when your mail or your parcels have arrived. I mean, look, why should you get right back into the surveillance cycle by giving out your address and your email addresses to everyone like you did in the States, when once you get down here, you can pretty much wipe the slate clean if you prepare ahead of time and know what to do? Like, for example, just the other day, I walked into a pharmacy. As soon as I got to the checkout window, they asked me for my email and my address. So I gave my decoy email, one that I have at Start Mail that I can eliminate at any time, and the address to an apartment I no longer live in. I do that all the time. In fact is, you know, even if you're using Uber, you have to sign up with a Facebook or email account, right? I always give them a decoy. And I know eventually they're going to sell my data to all kinds of advertisers, and when the junk mail starts coming in, I just delete that email address. That's the beauty of Start Mail. You can have 10 decoys, and then you keep a couple of them forever, the ones you might be needing. For example, if you're doing business or talking to family members or moving important documents back and forth, and then you've got your throwaway emails. Like, for example, when you sign up for free reports or information on the net, or even subscribing to newsletters or services, once the junk mail starts arriving, you could just delete those email addresses and that stuff's gone forever. And it's also an easy way to figure out which jerks you gave your email address to are the ones that are selling off your data to the highest bidder, too. That's the scam they use, you know. Suppose you have just a Yahoo or a Gmail address, right? And you see a report on how to buy and sell gold, trade options, flip real estate, whatever. Well, the first thing they're going to do is ask for an email address, and then they're going to send an activation link to that email address. You go to that email, you hit the link, and you're in. You get the report. Yeah, but now you're going to get all kinds of junk mail because they're going to sell that off to anyone and everyone. And if you don't have a decoy email address, you're on the junk mail list in your main email forever. All right, so maybe I'm beating a dead horse here, but still, I know most people aren't doing that. I get hundreds of emails. In fact, I deleted 10,000 just about 3 weeks ago. I'm talking about my Gmail account. That's the one I'm stuck with because when I first started up the Expat Files 9 years ago now, there were no anonymous email services. But that's all right because I don't do any sensitive or critical things through the Gmail account. But as for you guys sending me all those emails, I noticed that probably 80% of them are coming from Gmail, Yahoo, or Hotmail. That means you guys aren't using anonymous email accounts, right? Well, all I'm saying is that if you really want to unclog your life, get yourself an anonymous email account. Doesn't have to be Start Mail, could be Hush Mail or Proton Mail. There are a lot of them out there, but the good ones are going to cost you probably $30 to $50 a year. But man, it's worth it. Yeah, I know I said I wasn't going to beat a dead horse. Well, I guess I beat two dead horses there. Anyway, to continue on about the things you didn't know about Latin American banking, you heard me say that the law in Mexico, anyway, says they have to notify the account holder 90 days before the 3-year period of inactivity before they transfer your money out of the account and it's gone. Well, surprise, surprise, guess where that money goes? It says here, and I'm reading this directly from the statute, translated into English, it says, after 3 years, the account balance that will be transferred to the global account, if it's equal to or lesser than 300 times the official Mexican minimum wage, it will be transferred to another fund called the public fund, Beneficencia Pública. Then the money in the Beneficencia Pública is used to pay for health-related services and programs operated by the Mexican Secretary of Health. And in case you're wondering how much 300 times the Mexican daily minimum wage is, well, that works out to around $1,600 right now. And the rest of the absconded or stolen dough that came out of your inactive bank account, if it's more than 300 times the Mexican minimum wage, goes into the Mexican so-called global account for what that's worth, because once it's gone, you'll never get it back, though the official law claims you can. Insert manic joker laugh here. By the way, are you getting this? If you've had no movement in your account for 3 years, they steal your money, but they take a portion of it and they say it's going for the general good, you know, for public health and all that rot. Of course, this is Mexico and there's no skim, right? Now, if you believe that, you'll also believe that when the Kardashians die and go to hell, it won't smell a bit like burnt plastic. Right? You know, it just goes to show how government can complicate the simplest of things. However, it does say there is some recourse in getting your money back. Let me read this. It says, if the money has already been transferred to the Beneficia Pública, it's gone for good. However, if it's still in the global account, it can be reclaimed by the account holder by filling out some forms. Of course, I don't know anybody that's ever been able to accomplish that successfully, but let me read on. It says, if for some reason things do not go smoothly at your bank after you fill out those forms, you can turn to the Mexican government agency tasked with protecting account holders. It's called CONDUCEF for assistance. CONDUCEF. So anyway, according to the Mexican official government website, it says you should be able to get your money back after the government steals it from your account. Insert cynical joker laugh number two. Well, just to show you what a load of crap the Mexican government's handing you when they say you have a way of getting it back, let me read you a little part of an email from Donna M. She says, about 5 years ago, when I was establishing myself in Mexico, a coworker gave me advice based on experience when her retired U.S. citizen father passed away in Cancun, leaving a condo, a car, and a bank account. She sent me a long, detailed email saying that essentially, she was able to sell the condo and the car, but lost all of the $10,000 U.S. dollars in the bank because of no activity for what she said was only 6 months. And then you'll find out if you bank in Mexico or any place in Central or South America, because of the narcos and the drug corridor thing, they have very strict money laundering laws now. But in reality, because, again, the government wrote them, all they do is hamper the regular citizens and expats and gringos who try to move money around. I'm talking legally. Still, drug lords and politicians are forever hauling around suitcases, garages, and containers full of cash, and they rarely get busted or raided, and when they do, they don't do time. Meanwhile, if you try to transfer some money down from the States, even if it's a small amount, you have to jump through all kinds of hoops. Like, for example, Kathy J. writes this. I found out from my bank in Mexico, Banamex, that there's a government law called 115, where they have to verify your information on any wire transfers, where you live, where your money comes from, how much and how often you plan to put the money in your account. So anyway, I opened the account, not thinking about things like that, and 2 months later, the bank sent me a request for that information and more, warning me that if they did not receive the information in a certain amount of time, they would close my account. So I did everything they requested, twice. And you know what? They even sent a person to physically verify that I live at the address that I gave them. Meanwhile, you've got politicians stealing and skimming billions and narcos with huge mansions, estates, yachts, and private planes. But when a working or retired American tries to transfer down $5,000, he's the one that gets the third degree and gets investigated to the tune of sending someone out to investigate where you live. All right, me Johnny here again. You know what that reminds me of? An article I just read that said, each year 30 tons of cocaine slips through the U.S.-Mexican border through legal checkpoints, along with 5 tons of methamphetamine and 3 tons of fentanyl. How's that happen? Well, obviously the border guards on both sides are on the take. Meanwhile, you try to get on a plane with just one joint, they'll sniff you out and you're going to jail. Even if you're in a state where marijuana is legal, the federal rules apply at airports, and you know the feds, according to their books, they still say it's illegal. However, as far as these banking regulations, the best thing to do is to have some movement in your banking or checking or credit card account, I'd say at least once every 3 months. Now, you might wonder if you're up in the States, let's say, for 7 or 8 months before you make a trip back to the Latin country of your choice, how are you going to do that? Well, they've all got online banking now, and all you have to do is move a little dough, even a buck or two, from your dollar account to the peso or bolivar, colony, quetzal, lempira account, whatever funny money your chosen country uses. You see, the good thing about every bank in Latin America now, you can open a dollar and a local funny money account, and you can access your accounts online, so just move a little from one to the other every couple of months and you'll be fine. Or even just go to an ATM and withdraw 10 or 20 bucks. All right, now, since we're speaking of banks, credit cards, wire transfers, etc., I just got this email from our good friend, Mr. B, you know, the guy that makes over 20 bucks an hour teaching English to Chinese kids anywhere in the world. Of course, he's located here in Guatemala, because as it turns out, Guatemala is his favorite country. If you want to find out all the multiple reasons why, come on down to my January 2020 Expat Insider Seminar. Mr. B will be giving a little spiel on how you can do that too. That is, make 20 bucks an hour or more just sitting at your computer teaching English to kids in China. Now, admittedly, 20 bucks an hour doesn't sound like much when you're living up in the States and your rent's $1,000 or even $1,500 a month. But here in Latin America, remember, for 500 bucks a month, you could have a nice house with a yard in a good safe area, as long as you're not smack dab on the tourist trail, that is. And even then, you could get a nice single bedroom apartment for $500 a month, something that would cost you at least $1,500, even $2,000 a month, where I come from in Chicago. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, I just got this email from Mr. B talking about problems with banking issues here in Latin America, and I suppose anywhere. And after reading this, I totally get his point, and that's another reason why I just hate banks and love cryptocurrency. In fact, the sooner cryptocurrencies wipe banks off the face of the earth, the better. Though, as you know, they're not going down without a fight. In the end, it's a fight they're going to lose. But I digress as usual. I want to read Mr. B's email, and here it is. He titles it, Ridiculous. Johnny, I tried to make a purchase online with my Chase bank card. My purchase was denied, and a pop-up window said I have to call Chase Bank in the U.S. I called Chase Bank, and the automated phone system said my card had been restricted. I was transferred straight to the fraud department. They asked how they could help me. I explained what happened. They said they were going to send a message to my mobile phone number that was on file. I explained to them that I had not been in the U.S. for over a year, and therefore do not have a U.S. phone mobile number. They said that was the only way I could truly identify myself to them. They said the message has to be sent to the mobile number on file. I said the number you have on file is not a mobile phone number. It is a home phone number that I've not been in for over 2 years. Obviously, she wanted proof that I was me. I then told the lady that I have a TWIC card. That's a Transportation Worker Identification Credential. All right, Meet Johnny here. He's talking about a card that truck drivers carry to prove their credentials. Mr. B, back in the States, was a truck driver, so he's got a TWIC card, and that's what he's talking about. Anyway, he says, I told her I have a TWIC card, and you can only get a card like that with the approval of the Department of Homeland Security. I further told her I have a commercial driver's license with a hazmat endorsement. Is that not enough for you? Then I said, I have that commercial driver's license with hazmat endorsements, and I have a passport book and a passport card, too. I also have a Social Security and birth certificate. Will that do, I hope? She said, sorry, I cannot unblock your card unless I send you a message to the U.S. mobile phone line number we have on file. Then she asked if I had another Chase Bank card in my possession. I said, yes, my wife is here, and she has her card. Then the operator repeated pretty much the same thing and said, I have to ask you again, do you have any other Chase Bank cards in your possession? I repeated, yes, my wife is here and she has her card. And then I said, but I do not personally have a card. It's her card. Well, Johnny, I knew then, or at least I had the suspicion, that if I said I have my wife's card, they just might restrict or block her card too. So I was getting nowhere. No dice, Johnny. Then she told me, the only other thing I can do is go into a Chase Bank or have a Chase Bank employee who knows me verify who I am. I then explained I had not been in a Chase Bank personally in over 5 years. I do not know any Chase Bank employees, nor do I have a U.S. mobile phone number. She said, sorry, those are your three options, and we do that for your security. Then I tried to explain once again. All the documents I have, the TWIC card, the passport card, the commercial driver's license, the hazmat endorsements, the yada yada, Social Security, birth certificate. Then I said to her, you mean you're telling me that if I had a U.S. mobile number, something I can get at Walmart for $35 or less, I can get back the use of my Chase card? Yet, you're telling me my 6 federally approved documents are not enough? Then finally, Mr. B says, I keep a U.S. account because I'm not sure if I would ever need it. But I will never try to use it again, I can assure you. So that's how it went, Johnny. Mr. B, signing off. See you at the seminar. All right, Mr. B, thanks for that revolting little piece of news. But it just shows you things are getting harder and more complicated. And of course, with more and more purchases being made online, it's necessary to have some kind of credit card. Although more and more outfits are now taking cryptocurrencies. Even travel agencies are taking them now. And even though Amazon's not taking cryptocurrency directly as payment, you can buy Amazon gift cards with crypto and buy anything you want just as if you were using a credit or debit card. Same thing with eBay and a lot of the other big box stores. So slowly but surely, the cryptos are filling that niche. Now, there is one positive thing when you open a bank account here in Latin America. You get a debit or a credit card in U.S. dollars. And, of course, the local funny money, too. So you get 2 cards. Then if you want to buy something online, let's say from Amazon, you use the U.S. dollar card. Works just as well as any card coming out of a bank from the States. The only difference being that in most cases, your billing address will be different from your shipping address. Because, let's say you have a bank account with Banco Culo Amarillo in Panama. Well, your billing address is going to be your place in Panama. But let's say you're ordering something from Amazon, Sears, Overstock.com, or eBay. You'll want the merchandise shipped to your name and your Miami forwarding company address, which will then, within a couple of days or a week, forward it to the pickup location in Panama. So when you make the original order on Amazon, there'll be 2 addresses, your shipping address and your billing address. No problem, just check the box that says they are at different addresses and you're off to the races. By the way, for the record, I hate Amazon and everything they stand for, but I love that you can get practically any product fast and cheap and easy. Anyway, so Mr. B got himself caught in a catch-22. That happens to lots of gringos and expats. It's happened to me too. Worse yet, you call a U.S. bank or a company you ordered something from in the States and they put you on hold for 20 minutes. And probably half the time it's on your dime. In fact, I can't tell you how many times I've been on the phone with an airline trying to change a reservation, a date, or something or other, and I've been waiting on hold for 10 or 15 minutes, and suddenly the phone cuts out completely. Then you call back all pissed off and go through the same routine of press 9 and 6 and 3 for this or that or whatever, with the synthetically happy robot lady voice at the other end. You just want to strangle, tase, or yank her wires, only to wait for 20 minutes to get a live representative. Then, having to go through the whole damn story again with that person, I found out the hard way. The first thing you do when you get a live operator is you say, look, you got a pencil? Write my phone number down. If we get cut off, call me right back. Because if we do get cut off, I know you're in a call center, and there are probably 300 sweaty Pakistanis sitting next to you in the same room. If I get cut off and have to call back, I know I'm never going to get you, the guy I've already explained three-quarters of the story to. So first things first, if you're in Latin America, dialing outside the country, when you get a live person, instantly get his name and give him your phone number. By the way, that's one thing I like about Alibaba. Did you ever order from them directly from China? They're, you know, the wholesale providers to the world. That's where I ordered my latest portable solar system from. And guess what? They work through WhatsApp, which is basically free phone audio and video. That's one huge advantage to using Alibaba over Amazon. That means you can always talk to someone right away about your order. Oh, and you'll also find the Alibaba prices much cheaper than Amazon. However, the shipping is higher because it's coming directly from China. So it's a balancing act. But if you do order anything in quantity, Alibaba is the place to go. Why? Because there's no middlemen. For example, I bought my portable solar unit through Alibaba for $650 along with two portable solar panels, 200 watts each, for another $400 total, around $1,000. However, shipping was close to $500, so the whole works around $1,500. But you see, if I had to order 10 units, I'd have paid the same shipping, $500. Because you see, it doesn't matter to them if it's one unit or a pallet full of units. That's why Alibaba is great for quantity orders. In other words, if you're starting a business here in Latin America and have to order multiple items, you really should look into Alibaba. And once again, if what you've ordered is not too big and heavy, have them ship it to your Miami forwarding company. Oh, and get this, Alibaba will diddle with the invoice. They'll mark it down for you. You just ask them. They'll change an invoice for $1,000 to $300 just so you don't have to pay the aduana charges when it lands in your country. Whereas with Amazon, you're stuck with the original invoice. Now, I'm not advising you to do anything illegal here. I'm just telling you what smart and astute gringos and expats often do. Oh, and by the way, you'll learn a lot of those tricks in person if you come down to my Expat Insider Seminar. You'll also meet our brilliant crypto guys, Oscar Minard, and of course, the famous Bitcoin Dan, and Mr. B. So for all the info and sign-up details and to get in on those early bird discounts, go to www.theexpatfiles.com and click on the seminar link. Or go to www.theexpatfiles.com/seminar. And remember, repeat offenders, you get $1,000 off. And if you're coming down as a single looking to save $750, just let me know. I've got some people looking for roommates.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos. No Spanish language.